If you're innovating, creating, or making a difference,
this show is for you. Welcome to Over Coffee. I'm Dot Cannon. Here on Over Coffee, we talk with artists and innovators about the process of changing the world in terms of what they do.
And he taught himself robotics, some more 3D printing, and published all of his designs as open source. So anyone can download the design files for free and to build their own robot. It's the spirit of open source.
What I want to get to is a point where you can actually have conversations with it, integrate some kind of artificial intelligence into it so that you have a human-like machine.
3D printing is amazing. Robotics can be unbelievable. And when you combine the two of them, you just might wind up with the world's first open source 3D printed life-size robot called the InMove. It gets better. If you'd like to make one of these, the Robotics Society of Southern California is ready to help you. Founded in the 1970s as one of the world's first robotic societies, nonprofit RSSC has a great time exploring the ways robots can interact in our world. Alan Tim is Vice President of the Robotics Society of Southern California, and Walter Martinez is RSSC's secretary. And they both have hands-on experience with the InMove. Alan has built one, and Walter is currently in the process of creating one. Alan and Walter, before we talk about all the really cool things Robotics Society of Southern California is doing, and about the InMove, I'd like to know a little bit more about both of you. How did you both first come to fall in love with robotics?
Robotics has been kind of a hobby and a passion of mine ever since I was a child. I think Star Wars was the first time I got really excited about robots, but it's only been over the past couple of years, let's say 4 or 5 years, where you're seeing commonly available 3D printers, low-cost servos, and low-cost microcontrollers, kind of a trifecta of availability of parts that allows people to really get involved and build stuff and get involved in the hobby at low cost.
And you're doing something extremely cool with one of the current robots, which we'll talk about in just a moment. How about you, Walter?
Well, the same way. I watched Star Wars back in 78, 79, somewhere around there. And I said, that's what I want to do with my life. I want to build robots. And basically, how I got into the InMove is I built so many robots before, BattleBot and all kinds of robots. I saw Alan's InMove, and I figured, oh, I could build that thing in 30 days. You know, I felt very confident. Then I started learning about 3D printing and how it works. And a year later, I'm still building it.
Now, InMove, the world's first 3D printed robot. Alan, how'd that come on your radar?
Yeah, you know what? I was on an unrelated project where another member, not part of our club, it was a whole different group of people, had bought their first 3D printer. And I said, you know what? That sounds like fun. So I did my research. I chose my first 3D printer. And shortly after that, I stumbled across the first set of parts for the InMove. InMove, of course, is an open source robot. The files are available online, so anyone can download the part files and build their own for very low cost. And from that point on, I was hooked. It was my other project went on indefinite hold, and I was all about printing out the parts and building my own InMove.
Now, InMove is doing some pretty cool things as far as innovations with robotic hands and prosthetics and stuff.
Yeah, so there are some people who are looking into leveraging parts of the InMove design for prosthetics. It's funny you mention that because there's another group called Enable, enable.org, that actually are focused on making available several different hand designs for people with limb deficiencies to give them a low-cost hand. And the prosthetics market, a hand prosthetics can be several thousands of dollars, and there are a lot of people out there that can't afford it. So what this Enable group does, and this is my shout out to the Enable group, is they'll connect makers who can customize and 3D print hands with people who need a prosthetic wrist actuated hand to be able to produce that at no cost for the people that need it. It's an outstanding program.
That really is. Let's give their link before we go on.
Certainly, I'd be happy to. I believe the link is enable.org, and there is a series of links on how to register as a maker or how to register as someone who would like to qualify for a free or very low-cost hand. And they'll pair you up. You start out by applying, and once that's approved, you will supply evidence that you can print these out. So you'll print out a sample hand and show them pictures. And once you're approved, they'll add you to a pool of people who can be made available to print out these hands for people who need them.
Alan talked about his experiences.
building his own InMove robot.
It is a fantastic project. It has taken me in all kinds of new directions and really expanded my capabilities in terms of a robot enthusiast and a hobbyist. It has 27 degrees of freedom, so that means that it can move 27 different ways. You'd mentioned the hand. In the hand, each finger is individually articulated. So you have five servos, one servo for each finger, and then you have a servo for the wrist. And then if you go all the way up the arm, including the hand and the wrist, you have 10 degrees of freedom. That means there's 10 servos. You have two arms and two hands, so that's a total of 20. And you include all the servos in the head and the eyes and the torso. You have a total of 27 degrees of freedom. It moves 27 different ways using 31 servos.
Now, when you say a servo to a novice like me, what's a servo?
Oh, servos are awesome. They're these little gear motors that they use in racing cars and other unrelated hobbies. But they're so popular now and they're produced in such high volume that their cost has really come down. And they're so much fun for use in robotics. And they're a gear motor and you just supply power and a signal and you can get them to move. So they're a very low cost way to get movement out of robots, robot hands, robot arms, really anything that you'd like to design or download off the internet.
Walter, if I come in the room and I see an InMove robot, let's say that I'm not familiar with it, it's got all these servos, it's got all these degrees of freedom, what can I expect it to do?
Currently, you can make it move, for example, in different directions, similar to humans, so it does have really good articulation. You can make it grab something, pretty light though, the current strength is not that much. So you can make it grab something and have it pick it and place it someplace else, for example. But what I want to get to is a point where you can actually have conversations with it. So integrate some kind of artificial intelligence into it so that you have a human-like machine that you can have conversations with.
Wow. How are you with that right now? Where are you?
Well, some of us are experimenting with the Alexa, for example, from Amazon and other engines like that. We're just making progress as far as turning a light on by asking it to turn a light on. That's about it for now.
For now, that's pretty darn good. Yeah. What's one of your favorite stories so far about making your own InMove robot?
Ah, okay. So it's funny that I actually ended up getting three 3D printers for this project because when you print a part, it's so slow. And I thought, oh, if I have three 3D printers, then I can print them faster. So I got three 3D printers in my garage running 24/7. And it's funny because I just, you know, before I come to work, I set a job and I print three parts. When I get home, I pick up the three parts, move them out of the way, hit print again for three other parts before I go to sleep. And I just repeat that process over and over. And my wife is just, you know, saying, what are you doing? What is this? So now I got her involved in actually removing the parts for me so that I don't lose time, you know, when I get there. So it's, you know, it's pretty interesting. You learn so many other things out of that. There's so many components. There's materials that you learn about, electronics, software, and of course the community of people that are so excited about it. We actually meet a couple times a month so that we can discuss about it, and we have a little interest group that we developed, and we just try to improve every month.
The Robotics Society of Southern California. Would you share the story of that with me, please?
Oh, yeah, sure. So the Robotics Society of Southern California has been around since the 70s, actually. So before they had computer clubs, but somebody wanted a specific robotics club. So they made a club specifically for robots, for people interested in robotics at that time in the 70s. And it started out here in Southern California. People were meeting in different colleges, different houses, different businesses and things like that. And finally, we were at Cal State Fullerton, and then we got kind of shifted to here, to Cal State Long Beach now, because this is where I work, and we've been meeting here for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years maybe, and it's been great. We keep growing. At any one month, we have anywhere between 40 and 50 people that come every month continuously. And when we have events and competitions, we have anywhere from 40 to 80 or 90 people.
Alan shared with me off mic that you've been with them since 1992.
That is correct, yeah. So I came from Honduras in 1990, and my whole goal to come into this country was to learn how to build robots. That was my main purpose. I said, I'm going to go there, I'm going to learn it, and that was it. So I started looking around. Back then, there was no internet, so I would open the newspaper and try to figure out if there's anything related to robots around the area. And then I saw on the Penny Saver, back then it was like a weekly newspaper, and it was advertised, Robotics Society of Southern California, you know, come and check out our robots. And so I went, and I was hooked since.
How long did it take you to get hooked on RSSC?
Oh, immediately. Oh, yeah, I joined right away, and I kept coming and coming. And then at one point, I was actually the president for 3 years. So it's a fantastic organization. The knowledge in that place is just amazing. So
suppose somebody is just learning about robots and they don't quite know where to go. You teach robotics now. What would be one of the first things you would teach them?
Nowadays, it's a lot easier because there are so many robot kits available where you can start off with a kit, and the kit more than likely will have all the components you need. And there's so many articles online, and there's so many examples and video clips. YouTube is full of showing you how to build it. As Alan said, the servo motors, the motors are inexpensive now. The controllers are inexpensive. So anybody at any time can start building and learning about robotics. It's very, very easy nowadays.
When you say YouTube, where would you send somebody on YouTube to find out more about robotics if they don't know where to start?
Sure. Yeah, so just search Arduino and then type the word Arduino and then type the word robot, and you'll see hundreds of thousands of videos that show you how to start.
Easy as that. Alan, how about the same story from you? How'd you first get involved with RSSC?
You know, it's funny. I have in my notebook a letter, actually the response to a letter that I had written to the RSSC in the early 90s. I would have been, well, either in junior high school or high school at the time. And I was very excited. I saw an ad for the RSSC in the back of a magazine. And so I wrote them a letter introducing myself and asking them some questions. And someone in the club actually wrote back, and I kept it for all these years. I'll probably have to bring it in or scan it and add it to the forum at some point. And I've been attending on and off for about the past 5 to 7 years or so. As a matter of fact, if memory serves, the first time I met Walter, he had brought in a BattleBot to share with the club back when we were meeting at Cal State Fullerton. It was humbling. It was an incredible opportunity to see a robot that actually does battle and wins. For the past year and a half or so, I've been coming continuously because I came to realize that is important to me, and it's important to a lot of people, to have an opportunity to hang out and exchange ideas with like-minded people. I have a lot of understanding friends, a lot of people who nod and smile knowingly when I attempt to explain to them my challenges and successes of the day involving robotics. But it's nice to be able to exchange information and experiences with people who share your interest in the hobby. And that's really one of the things that's RSSC really means to me, is ability of like-minded people to gather and exchange ideas on an equal level.
Suppose we have the hypothetical beginner I was just talking about with Walter, who wants to come to an RSSC meeting and doesn't know what to expect. What do you tell them?
Well, the first thing I would do would be to invite them and show up. We accept members and visitors of all ages and experience levels. Our only requirement is you have to be able to sit still for 2 hours. But beyond that, we have a large variety of people from all backgrounds and experience levels. So if you're excited about robotics and are looking for an outlet or a place to start, we absolutely invite people to show up. Our meeting is the second Saturday of every month. And all the information about our meetings, where we meet at Cal State Long Beach, the meeting times, and a schedule of contests and speakers is available at rssc.org.
But Walter says there's one mistake to avoid the first time you visit RSSC.
One of the things I like to say is that please don't be intimidated when you come into the room. Sometimes people walk in and they see somebody writing all this, you know, things that look very complicated on the board. And then people get intimidated and they leave. But don't leave. There's also very, very simple things that we start with. And everybody is so friendly. They can help you out from the beginning, whatever questions you have. So please don't be intimidated by it.
In fact, I heard somebody say recently that code is just a language. Would you agree with this?
Yeah, that's correct. Especially now, it's very English-like. So high-level languages are very, very much English-like. You just, you know, write in a logical way, and it just sort of follows it. You just got to learn the syntax, basically.
So no freaking out if you see a bunch of ones and zeros or whatever.
That is correct, yeah.
So how did the InMove robot come about? Alan shared the story.
On or around 2012, there's a French sculptor. His name is Gael Langevin. And he had been contracted to do an advertisement where he had to create a robotic hand. And so he purchased his first 3D printer, taught himself 3D design, and designed this hand for this advertisement. And after the hand was commissioned, the full advertisement, the contract wasn't fulfilled, but it sparked something in him. And he taught himself robotics, some more 3D printing, and he mechanized the hand and then ended up designing the arm and then the torso and the head and published all of his designs as open source. So anyone can download the design files for free and to build their own robot. It's the spirit of open source. It was a fantastic opportunity, and I'm grateful to him for that.
And that's inmove.com, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, so the main site is inmove.fr. Gail's French, so he works with French websites. Or if you keyword search on Google, inmove, I-N-M-O-O-V, you'll find the site. It's one of the first two search results.
We mustn't forget to give your websites as well and your video website. You were talking about your open source software. Where can people find the robots on which you're working?
Oh, sure. So I've been doing a pretty good job of publishing the work that I do on Facebook and on YouTube. So if you keyword search Alan's Robot Lab, that should link you to my Facebook page, my YouTube channel, and my GitHub, where I'm trying to keep that up to date with all the code that we're creating for the InMove and our other projects.
Excellent. And Walter, what about your InMove robot? Where can people see your progress?
So I have a website called roboticscity.com, and that's where I'm publishing everything.
What resources would each of you recommend? Walter, you said Arduino before, but how about from you, Alan, any resources you'd recommend to fellow roboticists that we haven't already discussed?
You know, it's actually a fantastic time to be excited about robots. If you want to roll something on your own from scratch, the source components are very inexpensive, and there are a large number of kits out there. So it all depends on where your interest lies or where you'd like to extend your capabilities. If you're more comfortable with hardware, working on hardware, there's kits where you can build your own robot. There's also kits and robots out there where you're not really excited about building one, but are more excited about programming it, where you can buy the robot fully assembled or an easy to assemble kit, and you can focus on the software. So it all depends on where you want to start. But one of the most exciting aspects of robotics, one of the first charges that you get for someone who's new to the hobby, is the simple matter of connecting the programming world to the physical world. So typically that involves an Arduino, which is a very low cost computing board, and connecting that to a servo or a motor and writing some code that ends up making the servo and the motor turn. There's nothing quite like it. It's a lot of fun.
It sounds like Tinker Toys times 90.
Oh, yeah. Tinker Toys times 100.
I'd love to get a favorite story from each of you about being a roboticist. Can I start with you, Walter?
Well, you know, we do so many events every week. So I got so many stories, actually. Let me see. I actually have a kit that I do for kids. And then kids from ages 10 and up can start actually building their own. And some of the things that I've seen is that these kids build their own robots, and then they go out there and compete in competitions. And then they actually end up winning. They actually end up winning against me when I compete against them. So it's pretty incredible to see how they actually get to build this thing that, you know, from scratch, and then they get to do something useful with it and learn with it. And I get a satisfaction from seeing people learn things and then go on and become someone, you know, who now works for like SpaceX, for example, or JPL, or, you know, building the future, basically. And so those are pretty exciting stories that I've seen over and over.
And your robotic kit, is that available on the website you mentioned before?
Yeah, it's in roboticscity.com. Yeah.
And how about from you, Alan, one of your favorite stories about being a roboticist?
You know, I just get the biggest kick out of being able to share my time with other people that have similar interests. So attending the meetings, we're really big on outreach, making ourselves available to high schools, elementary schools, and other avenues just to share our excitement of technology and robotics and get kids excited about possible futures in the technology, engineering, and science sectors.
What are you doing specifically? I know there have been a very few young women that have gotten into robotics until just recently. Are you doing a specific outreach of any type to girls and young women?
You know, one of the interesting things that I've seen, now, first off, our presentations, our talks are absolutely gender neutral. Anyone from any age and any background is absolutely welcome to join the clubs, you know, share their projects and creations. And one of the things that we're seeing now, hopefully more often than the past, is we're getting more women into engineering and science disciplines, which is way overdue. And for the simple reason, the more varied backgrounds you have in a discipline, the better off that you are. You know, I don't know if I'd necessarily call any of the disciplines stale, but bringing in some additional fresh perspectives and different ways of approaching problems has to be great. And we're always looking forward to encouraging people from all backgrounds, young and old, male, female, who have an interest in science and technology to participate.
Again, rssc.org. If you could only have people get one thing from either of you about innovation, creativity, and making a difference, what would you want that to be?
I would say that people look at this project and pick the areas that they really like. Robotics involves electronics, software, and materials and mechanics. And so my thing is just basically tackle the area that you have an interest in first and then start from there.
And how about for you, Alan?
The first thing is just to don't be afraid to get out there and get your hands dirty. So if you have an interest in anything involving robotics, technology, and science, don't be afraid to go out there and buy a kit, watch some YouTube videos, read a blog, get your hands dirty, pick up a couple components, plug an Arduino into a motor, and see what happens. Don't be afraid to make mistakes. Just get out there and expand yourself and expand your horizons and express yourself. If it's creative or programming or design or hardware, just get out there and give it a shot, because you're not alone. There are people all across the U.S. and the planet that have similar interests as you do. And if you're in the area, absolutely stop by and share what you're working on. We'd love to hear it.
And of course, in robotics, just like any other area, there's one vital step to learning and growing. What's a really good mistake that you learned from?
Oh, there have been so many. And that's one of the things you can't be afraid of as well. In our club, we always encourage people. We have people who will bring their projects in. They'll show what they're working on. And one of the first things that you realize from doing that is that there's a lot of stuff that works perfectly well at home. We call this under laboratory conditions. Under laboratory conditions, my project works flawlessly. And then when you change its location, you bring it in, you change one of the parameters, it doesn't really work so well. And the important thing is to not get discouraged by it, to learn from the experience and allow that to push yourself to do better. When I brought my InMove into the club for the first time, middle of last year, I was very excited to bring him in. He was complete. I had an audience of people who might be interested in what I had been working on. And so I brought him out of the car and I started rolling him across the parking lot to bring him in. Well, I had designed a temporary plastic plug at the base of the robot that connected the rolling base to the pedestal piece. And the first time I hit a rock in the parking lot, that little plastic piece broke and the robot was about to fall. So I grabbed the robot, who weighs about 40 pounds, and in the process of grabbing him, I almost broke one of the arms off. And I hadn't even made it into the classroom yet for the club. But luckily, I had a couple of people that I recognized who kind of helped me carry in the pieces. And unfortunately, InMove's premiere in the club was leaning up against a side of a wall while I talked about him. And it was a little disappointing for me because I was looking forward to sharing all the cool stuff that he did. But you know what? That inspired me to look at the design and then to make some changes to it so that it could survive a trip from the car to the classroom. So I identified about four problem areas, areas that I saw the design could be improved. I improved the design, printed out the parts, shared the design on Thingiverse, because we're big open source proponents to give back to the community. And as a result, my InMove is now very strong. He doesn't break when you roll him across the tarmac. And he is now in a place where I can travel and I can take him for talks and discussions and not have to worry about anything breaking.
You've been talking about your InMove like it's a person almost. What's his name?
You know, the name of my InMove is Gray. It turns out I'm not very imaginative, and the frame plastic is printed in gray ABS plastic or PLA plastic now. So my InMove's name is Gray.
And what kind of a personality does Gray have?
You know, right now he's kind of sedate, yet curious, trying to make sense of the world around him.
And Walter, what's your robot's name?
Evo.
Evo, EVO?
EVO, yes. Because people were asking me, so is it a he or a she? So I thought Evo was like a neutral name. It's not a he or a she. I do see it as a being, but not male or female. So Evo, I think, is a name that, you know, can go both ways, I guess.
That really fits. And what kind of personality do you think Evo will have, even though he or she is not finished?
He's also curious, or she is also curious, yeah. It is also curious.
And Walter, what's a really good mistake that you made with your InMove or other robot that you learned from?
Oh, don't build a robot that is bigger than it can fit in your car.
That has a story that goes with it, huh?
Yep. So make sure you measure everything before.
Yeah. How'd you get the robot to travel?
Well, I ended up buying a pickup truck so I could fit it on the back. Yeah. I got a truck.
All right. So duly noted, yeah. No huge robots.
Yeah, it's probably less expensive to buy a truck than to take it apart and build a smaller one.
Alan and Walter, thank you for your time today.
All right. Thanks, Dot. It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
You and I have been listening to Alan Timm, Vice President of the Robotics Society of Southern California, and to Walter Martinez, Secretary and former President of RSSC. If you're in the Southern California area and you love robots, Robotics Society of Southern California invites you to come check out their monthly meetings. You'll find more information on rssc.org. That's rssc.org. Meanwhile, check out all the cool robotics projects Alan and Walter have been doing. Once again, you'll get to see Alan's latest work if you go to Facebook and type in Alan's Robot Lab. That's facebook.com/Alan's Robot Lab. And take a look at Walter's robotics kit, his research, and his class notes on his website, roboticscity.com. That's robotics with an S, roboticscity.com. And that concludes this edition of Over Coffee. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to Over Coffee through our website, twomavericks.com. That's two, T-W-O, Mavericks, M-A-V-E-R-I-X, twomavericks.com. And you can contact us at twomavericks@gmail.com. I'm Dot Cannon. Here's wishing you a cappuccino day.